Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie here with John, back together after Crime Con.
Dude, you excited that we get to go back again next year?
I didn't mean for that to rhyme. Yes, Crime Con was outstanding. I got to meet some of our listeners there, and that was awesome. Hopefully picked up some new listeners from there. But John, it was a blast. There's so much happening, so many different causes you can get involved with. And just so many amazing conversations with people from literally all over the world. Next year in September, it's going to be in Denver. You can go ahead and get your tickets now. We'll try to get a discount code to give to you guys. But in the meantime, go ahead and look it up. Start booking your trip. It is well worth it. And Denver is amazing.
Yeah, we were able to network with some folks, and we have interviews. Like, we have two already scheduled, yet to be recorded. So you guys will be getting to hear some of the fruit of that labor over the next few weeks.
Yeah. Some amazingly interesting people doing some awesome work. So was excited. If you did get to meet us, we appreciate that. Feel free to tag us in social media. I was there with Nate on Friday, and they're solo for the next 2 days. But if we're there in Denver, John will be there. Write it down.
Putting it on my calendar already. So yeah, guys, we wouldn't have been able to make the trip to Nashville and let alone Denver without the support of you all, and especially our Patreon members. So I'd like to thank right now Miss Ellen, who came in this week, and also the Lunar Joker, or the Luna Joker 07. The Luna Joker came in at the $7 a month level. So I've mailed off an autographed picture of you boys. And then Ellen came in at the $3 level. So both of those are going to get bonus episodes each and every month. Look, they also get early access to Left on Dead Season 2, and I hope that Episode 11 will be on here, if not already, like in the next couple of days. That's the final episode, and boy, I'm excited about
it. Yeah, we've taken our time on that one to try to get it right, and I think actually right before we recorded this, we finally hit the end note the way we wanted to, so...
Yeah, if you're listening to Left on Dead Season 2 on just any other podcast app, you are probably only on Episode 5 right now. So yep, all 11 episodes posted on Patreon. The only way you can listen to those is to join patreon.com.
Yep. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait till mid-July to find out what happens. I got to stop talking about it because I've spoiled it a couple times for people.
Oh, no.
Anyway, got a big thank you to give for a review that came in over on Spotify. This is from Fly C, the letter C. Fly. It says, I first listened to you guys on Talk is Jericho and always looked forward to your episodes. I only started listening to your podcast recently, and I am obsessed. You guys do such a great job. Thank you, Fly C. Fly.
Fly C. Fly.
I kept wanting to say McFly, but that's a different thing.
I get it.
Yeah. Guys, today's case, I don't know. I just feel like we're on a roll of outstanding stories, and it's amazing. I got to talk about some of our cases to people at our booth there on Podcast Row, and that was awesome. But the number of cases I was introduced to that I've never heard of, we have hundreds of episodes, is just astounding. So there's unfortunately no end to content for us, but we want to keep telling good stories, and I think we got one today.
We sure do, man. So why don't you get the ball rolling?
Hugo Selinsky was born on August 1st, 1973 in Sioux City, Iowa. Met some good folks from Iowa at Crime Con. His parents, Ruth and Robert Friend, were divorced by the time that Hugo was just 5 years old. His mother took Hugo and his sisters back to her hometown in Pennsylvania, a town called Wyoming Valley. Robert Friend would go on to serve 2 years in prison for stealing jewels, and he moved out west. He really didn't have a relationship with his children after they left to go back to Pennsylvania. But Ruth then met another man, and this guy's name was Ron. He was a bank examiner. He was Ron Selinsky. So with Ron, Ruth was able to find stability that she didn't have when she was married to Robert, and this was a better home for Hugo and his two sisters. They also went on to have four more kids of their own, And Ron, in this process, officially adopted Hugo, hence him taking the last name. Hugo went on to Gate of Heaven Elementary and was really involved in local Little League baseball, which is where a lot of kids spend their time. I love seeing my kids do that as well. So far, he's got a stepdad who's adopted him, and he's being a normal boy.
He played baseball, which I know you love, but he also played football. He was supposedly a decent quarterback. I mean, nothing you've said so far sounds terrible. I mean, there was a divorce, but it's kind of normal for kids to grow up in a divorce.
Reality, yeah.
At the time, I don't think it was as common, but now, I mean, it's just another thing that happens. It's unfortunate. By the time he was 14, though, Ron said that this boy, quote, wanted a wild way of life, end quote. So in his teenage years, he had 4 car thefts, several DUI arrests, and then charges of driving with a suspended license. Now, I know your teenage years are you're supposed to get in a little bit of trouble, but this is not good.
Yeah, that's a lot of trouble and some heavy legal charges coming along with it. That's more than average.
I know in my high school, Jamie, did you all have superlatives where you would get voted like most likely to succeed or class clown, those kinds of things?
Yes, yeah, some people got those. I don't know that I did, but yeah.
Would it surprise you to hear that I got friendliest?
No, I believe that. That's why I needed you at Crime Con.
I wish that you could have saw my face, though, in that picture because I look so mean. But anyway, his classmates voted him most likely to be in detention. So that kind of just gives you a picture of what his classmates thought of the guy. He had a 1.5 grade point average. He graduated 152nd out of a class of 153.
We'll cover that other person next week. Just kidding.
I mean, I just think the other person, like, I don't know. Maybe they had some severe, you know.
Issues.
I'm trying to think of the word, like, learning disabilities. Yeah. So the last yearbook photo that he took was in his sophomore year, which is around the same time that Hugo became a father for the first time.
Yeah, and this was, I mean, we keep saying this, but even more so than very looked down upon if you had a child out of marriage. This was in the 70s, and it was happening quite a bit, but he's a sophomore, so that's like 16 years old. And you would think, for some people, something like this would turn their lives around. They're a goofball, they're getting in trouble, but then something really serious happens to get them to focus. Hugo decided to go on and enlist in the Marines. Some people do that to help them gain that discipline and get moving in the right direction. But he would end up getting in a motorcycle accident that kept him from reporting to boot camp. He would eventually recover and go to his basic training in South Carolina. And while he was there, he finally had a little bit of structure and discipline to his life. But then the Marines figured out that he owed $3,000 in restitution to the Luzerne County Juvenile Court. They discharged him for fraudulent enlistment because you have to disclose prior history, debts, and things like that. And he just apparently lied on the paperwork. $3,000 today to be owed. I mean, that's obviously not a lot of money, but he owed it to the juvenile court to pay back something that he had done. He came home and he did hold a few jobs. He tried to be involved and to maintain that discipline, but they never lasted really long. He had worked in a warehouse, a deli clerk, doing hard labor and construction. He washed dishes at a steakhouse. He worked at a local college, did a lot of different things. But it's during this time that, in addition to just getting in trouble, he becomes actually addicted to alcohol and cocaine. He would get into rehab. Again, that's a very forward-thinking thing. They were around in the 70s, but even now I think people kind of resist going into that. But it was near his home in Wyoming Valley. And in 1993, after he got out of rehab, he would be charged with 2 more DUIs. So he continues to get in trouble. Here we see him at around 20 years old, and he's already had multiple driving under the influence charges. His life is not going the direction that he wants it to, especially being a father.
And in 1994, he would become a father again. That's when he fathered his second child. In June of that same year, he met another man. And this man was named Earl Nagel. And they robbed a bank in Plains Township, Pennsylvania. And in that, it was an armed robbery. They used a semi-automatic handgun. Thankfully, they didn't hurt anybody, and they were able to make off with a large amount of money. But a teller did what she was supposed to do, and she put a paint cartridge and slipped it in the money bag. And as they would leave the bank, the cartridges would explode, and it would coat the money with some red dye. Now, this is funny, man, and I know that this is, I don't know, it's funny, but it's not. When the FBI raided the two homes that were owned by Hugo's parents, they found evidence that Hugo had tried to launder the money in the washing machine. So we've heard of money laundering. He literally did money laundering by putting it in the washing machine to get the red dye off.
Yeah, he was trying to clean the dye off. Money laundering is essentially washing the trail off of money by putting it in different places and spending it on different things. But I wonder if he connected that, oh, this must be what that means. I like to think so, just because that makes it funny.
I'd like to point out again that he graduated 152 out of 153.
Yep.
I don't think he connected the dots.
I could see the 153 person just shaking his head at him. That's not money laundering.
Yeah, and also you're ruining your money.
Yes.
Anyway, he would plead guilty to robbery, and he was sentenced to 82 months in federal prison. So while he was at Allenwood Federal Correctional Facility, Hugo was stabbed three times during an assault by three other inmates. So, probably not well-liked in prison, I think, is the sum of that. So he was transferred to a facility in New Jersey. And while he was there, he assaulted a correctional officer. And that's just a big, big no-no. So he ultimately landed at the Lewisburg Penitentiary in Union County. And it was there that Hugo met another man. This man was named Paul Weekly. Paul was a 33-year-old convicted bomb maker, and he was serving 120 months for building a pipe bomb in Michigan. These are two people that you would not want to find each other and strike up a friendship.
Yeah, and I feel like that happens in a lot of the cases we cover when people get out of prison. They've either made a new connection or learned a new skill that helps them be a criminal when they get out. Hugo would be released in 2001, and that's when he went back to move in with his stepdad, Ron. His mother had passed away by that time, and Ron and Hugo at this point in their lives just didn't get along. Hugo obviously getting a lot of trouble. Ron was getting up in years, and Hugo ended up moving out after just a couple months. He found a job in construction, and he worked in that for a while. It's something that he had done before. And again, I genuinely feel like a lot of times people are trying to do things the right way, but he had trouble keeping a job. He would eventually start dating a woman named Christina Stom and moved in with her at the home that she owned in Luzerne. Now, this house sat on a 6-acre piece of land, and it was, I mean, owning property has always kind of been a sign of establishment, and he was really happy to be there. It was something that she owned, so he was able to benefit from that, and it was a big piece of property, which made him feel accomplished, even though he just kind of dated himself into it.
So around this same time, there was a pharmacist in town who was facing some pretty major charges. I want to introduce you to Michael Kirkowski, and he had just pleaded guilty to running a prescription drug ring and earned at least $800,000, and he was about to be sentenced. So this dude running a drug circle and almost made $1 million doing so. And he's a pharmacist.
Yeah.
Not good. So a man with extreme access to drugs, and he's selling them illegally.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hugo was seen at Michael's trial. And later, Michael referred to Hugo as one of his best friends. Just before the sentencing on May 3rd, 2002, Michael and his girlfriend Tammy Fawcett go missing. So Michael misses his sentencing, and so he's considered a fugitive from justice. Both Michael and Tammy are 37 years old at this time.
Yeah, they went missing, and obviously that is going to mean something big in our story today. So when we get back, we'll talk about what happened to Hugo when Tammy and Michael went missing.
Hello, and welcome to Fatal Whispers, the trial of Nick Boyd.
Do you know the barber shop down on Commerce?
Cindy King.
You really don't understand how deep this goes.
She's behind this whole thing.
Looks like blood.
We didn't kill
Ted. Not kill Ted.
Killed Ted.
A podcast. Great.
As we stand at this pivotal moment, charged with the solemn duty of determining the fate of Nick
Boyd. I did not kill Ted.
I speak on behalf of the jury to deliver our verdict.
I am your host, Alex Bennett, and boy, do I have a story for you.
From the creators of True Crime Cast, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to Season 2 of Left on Dead.
And we're in May of 2002, and Michael, who is a pharmacist and was convicted of running an illegal drug ring, who also happened to claim that Hugo Solinsky was his best friend, he and his girlfriend Tammy have gone missing. At this time, we know that Hugo ended up going to Michael's father's home three times while they're missing. On his first visit, he told Mr. Krakowski that he was in contact with Michael and that he needed money to provide to Michael to give to his defense team. Mr. Krakowski gave Hugo $30,000 to give to his son. He came back a second time, told him the same thing, walked away with another $30,000. In October of that year, Hugo came back once again for money. This time, Mr. Krakowski demanded to talk to Michael before he gave over anything. And this time Hugo was asking for $40,000. Hugo got mad when he asked him for proof that his son was actually the one wanting this money. He pulled out a gun and shot it into the air, essentially making this an armed robbery because Mr. Krakowski would ultimately give him the money out of fear when he pulled out this weapon. Authorities knew about that robbery for more than 6 months, but they weren't able to get what they needed to arrest and charge Hugo for stealing all this money. They kept their eye on him, though, and tried to watch him to catch him red-handed in something. In March of 2003, Hugo was arrested on the road that his home was on for suspicion of driving while under the influence. During this arrest, Hugo allegedly kicked out the back window of the police car to escape custody. And we've talked about some wild things that have happened, but on this day, June 5th of 2003, things get really wild. That morning, Hugo was setting up for a party. At this point, he had $100,000 he had stolen from Mr. Krakowski. His sister, Marianne, was graduating nursing school, and he said he was going to throw a little graduation celebration. Around noon that day, there was a crew that came. They were putting up a tent. They were putting tables out. They were getting everything set up. And that's when a slew of Kingstown Township police and state police cruisers pulled up into the driveway.
So the crew began working on a tip. And within 4 hours, the bodies of Michael and Tammy are pulled from the soil near a burn pit. So at this point, Hugo is arrested in connection with the robbery incident with Mr. Krakowski and was taken into custody. So his sister Marianne couldn't believe what she was seeing. She later told reporters her brother was shocked when investigators said that they were looking for human remains. She said Hugo looked at her and said, "They're looking for bodies," end quote. And the look on his face was pure disbelief. 4 days later, this would be on June 9th, 2003, officials uncover three more bodies on Hugo's land. One was that of 29-year-old Frank James of New York City. Another was Adai Kyler, a 23-year-old from Kingston Township. An informant claimed that these men were drug dealers that Hugo killed and then put in the burn pit. The third body was burnt too badly to ever be identified.
Yeah, and the look of disbelief on his face, I believe that he had it, but I think the disbelief was more,
"I've got caught."
"I can't believe they found out," instead of, "I don't know why they're looking for bodies." On June 11th, Hugo was already in court. He was there for a suspended license charge. The reporters met him there. They had questions about what had happened at his house, and he smiled as he told them he had no idea how there were five dead bodies came to be on his property and they were buried in the backyard. When asked if he killed and buried them, he said, absolutely not. When asked if he knew who did it, he said, you'll find out in court. So it seems to me, John, that he's enjoying this spotlight and trying to build intrigue. He would ultimately be charged in October of 2003 with the murder of Frank James and Adai Kyler. No charges were filed for Michael or Tammy. Any insight into why that may be? Like, they were known, they were at least associated with Michael before they went missing. So I would think those would be the easier charges to prove than Frank and Adai.
I mean, is it one of those situations where, yes, they were found on your property, but if that's the only thing, is that enough to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that he did it? Is there any other physical evidence linking him to the murder and the crime other than they were found on his property?
And maybe they were just holding that back and they could potentially prosecute that later. Maybe they were still investigating while prosecuting for these two. Who knows?
So believe it or not, this story gets even weirder. So Hugo's in prison for what he did to Mr. Kukowski. But a few days later, on October 10th, 2003, Hugo escapes from the maximum security ward of the Luzerne County Jail. At around 9:40 p.m., he used bed sheets that were strung together in order to climb down 7 stories of the prison wall. That is a long way down, man.
I'm so afraid of heights. At 2 stories, I don't think I would be able to try that.
We have a 3-story building at church, and I do a lot of maintenance. I cannot get on the roof. It's too high, and this is like double that. So this is insane.
And hanging from sheets.
Yeah, that's true. So then he used a mattress to climb over the razor wire fence and was gone. Another inmate, a man named Scott Bolton, escaped with Hugo, but he fell during the escape and was flown to the hospital with serious injuries. And it was reported that he never walked again. So this was, you know, catastrophic for this guy. Hugo initially hid at his aunt's house for a day, but by day 3, he had returned to his home. This is where the bodies were discovered, and turned himself in to the police. In 2006, so 3 years later, a judge threw out his escape charges after errors by the district attorney's office related to the requirements for a speedy trial. So he's not facing any punishment for potentially murdering Mr. Krakowski and Tammy. And then also he escapes jail, leaves, turns himself back in, and because some paperwork was misfiled, he's getting off on those charges too.
I'm just going to hope that people believe he's going to go away forever for these other charges and then they can revisit those, because that just seems absurd to me. And it was in that same year, February 2006, that a jury was selected for his trial of Frank James and Adai Kyler. And amazingly, after the trial, after 3 long days of deliberations from these bodies found burned on his property, Hugo was found not guilty of the murder charges. Now, they did find him guilty on 2 counts of abuse of a corpse. He was sentenced to 2 to 4 years for that, for burning the bodies, essentially. And as soon as that trial was over, he was immediately charged with the murders of Michael and Tammy. So in August of that year, he was charged with a home invasion robbery in a neighboring county. And that's an unrelated charge. So he's like committing crimes. I don't know when he sleeps. There was a jeweler that had claimed that Hugo and Paul Weekly had broken into his house, tied his hands up, and put duct tape over his mouth and eyes before robbing him blind. Paul was also charged in this incident. Paul pled guilty to these federal charges, got a life sentence for this armed, essentially kidnapping and robbery, and he agreed to testify against Hugo. We later find out that Paul was the one who tipped the police off about the bodies in Hugo's yard. Paul had been arrested on another unrelated burglary charge, and while he was talking with detectives on June 4th, again the day before they found the bodies, he provided information about the possibility of bodies in that area, trying to give them something to get himself lighter charges or a lighter sentence. I think we hear that happen pretty often, but not always do they go dig up bodies where you tell them to go? In 2009, Hugo went on trial for the robbery of the jeweler's home and was found guilty of that, sentenced to up to 65 years in state prison. So for the abuse of the bodies and for this armed robbery, he's up to about 69 years in prison. But of course, he has more charges waiting.
So in January of 2015, this would be 12 years after they disappeared, Hugo's trial for the murders of Michael Kurkowski and Tammy Fawcett began. So the DA told the jury at the beginning, he said, quote, "What you will hear will shock you, will horrify you, and will break your heart," end quote. Prosecutors said that Hugo, who is now 41 years old and a co-conspirator, beat and tortured Michael to get him to tell them where he was keeping tens of thousands of dollars in his home. Paul Weekly testified that Michael was beaten with a rolling pin until he revealed where the money was. Then the two took plastic ties to strangle both Tammy and Michael to death. And this was not a very fast death. This was torture that was prolonged. And it really is awful. Paul said that the only reason Tammy was killed was because she was at Michael's house when they showed up. They had no reason to hurt this woman. She was just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Kind of the definition of victim of circumstance here for Tammy. The defense's opening statement in defending Hugo immediately pinned the murders all on Paul Weekly, who again had brought up this whole thing by telling authorities where the bodies were. They called a dozen witnesses to try and really crush Paul's credibility and to tell people that he was lying all along, trying to get himself out of trouble. They pointed out that it was Paul who actually knew exactly where the bodies were. He told them where to dig to find them. And then he only agreed to testify against Hugo to avoid the death penalty in another federal case. So he had every reason to lie. And that's what the defense was really going after. They claimed that he knew that if he came forward, he could ask for that reduced sentence if he cooperated. Even Hugo's brother, Ron Jr., testified that Paul was often at Hugo's property even when Hugo wasn't there. So now they've given Paul motive to lie about it and opportunity to get it done. So they're suggesting that Paul could have burned and buried these bodies without Hugo even knowing about it.
I mean, look, if you and I ever got in the business of murdering people, I'm not going to bury those people at my house. I want to bury them at your house.
That's a great point there. That's a Paul was thinking ahead for sure. Maybe they just thought the property was bigger.
Or
that's
hear me out. Bury it. I wouldn't bury them anywhere associated with either of us.
There's the winner. Or we just don't kill people.
I graduated 25th out of 28.
That's so, also an no, option. I'm kidding. 27.
So, yeah. After 2 days of deliberation, the jury came back with a guilty verdict for Hugo in the murders of Michael and Tammy. So Hugo was sentenced to life in prison on February 18th, 2015. And just a few hours later, Hugo granted his very first interview with a local news team. In that interview, he emphasized that he was innocent. He said, "As far as the verdict, it's hard to say. I respect the verdict. I live with it. I stand by my innocence." He claims the jury was swayed by the lies of Paul. And when reporters asked him how the bodies ended up at his property, he said, "That's a question I'd like to have an answer to myself."
He seems to like talking to the press. And part of that maybe is him being intelligent enough to think, "I'm innocent, I can leverage this." Or him being devious enough to think the same thing. During sentencing, Mrs. Kurkowski, who now we have Hugo being found guilty of robbing her husband and killing her son, called Hugo a useless waste of space and air and said, "You are going straight to hell," which I feel like is probably a pretty common reaction for a mother if somebody murdered her son. She went on to say, "I know I can be satisfied knowing you will spend eternity suffering in hell, because there's going to be an eye for an eye. Hugo, you know you'll be right where you belong, in hell with Satan, because you are the devil in every sense of the word." That's pretty strong, but I wouldn't say it's unexpected. What do you think?
No, I mean, if, look, I think losing a child is one of the worst things that you could ever experience in your life. And if that's taken from you by this kind of monster, those feelings are very normal. And
yeah.
I would say that I would struggle with them myself.
Tammy's sister, Lisa, was also very upset. She said, "I know you have no remorse for what you've done because I can tell by the look on your face right now. You get to see your family. I have to go to a gravesite to see my sister. Now, do you really think that's fair?" And this, I mean, you can go and look up victim statements at these sentencing hearings. And I think it's in some ways therapeutic that these individuals finally get to say these feelings out loud to the person that they fully believe did this. And if you're asking me, based on Hugo's history, character, and the evidence available, I would say he was involved in these murders. It may have been all him. I also wouldn't be surprised if Paul was heavily involved in it as well. But John, do you think they got it right? Is Hugo really a waste of space and air, or did he get framed by his friend Paul to get a lesser sentence?
Yeah, I mean, everything in my soul believes that he knew about this, was involved with it. I mean, I don't think Paul did all of this by himself. So I'm at peace with it.
Yeah.
I mean, because you say that, there is that slight little fragment of doubt that could creep in. But I think given everything I know about this guy, I feel certain that he was involved in some capacity. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if he's going and robbing Mr. Kurkowski after his son goes missing, he knows where his son is, or else he's not going to be doing that. And where Michael was buried in Hugo's backyard. So Hugo Selinsky, we often share the traumatic childhood of individuals that grow up to be serial killers. And by all means, it looks like if he killed Michael and Tammy in one incident, Frank in another, and Mr. Kyler in another, that's three separate murders with cooling off periods. That makes him a serial killer.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's true.
But all that to say, his childhood wasn't that traumatic. So what was it that drove him to kill? It appears to be greed, the love of money, but what was he getting from everybody? And even if you are greedy, what makes you okay going to that extent to get it?
I'm apprehensive to say that this guy had no trauma in his childhood. Just because we don't know about it doesn't
Excellent
mean
point.
It didn't happen.
Good point.
But at the same time, how many other people have traumatic events happen in their life and they don't grow up to be serial killers? So I think at some point you've got to take responsibility for your actions, even if something awful did happen to you. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think greed. And I mean, this guy was having problems from the time he turned like 14 years old.
Yep.
So you are who you run with. Maybe you were hanging out with some bad folks, and slowly over time, you just kept going downhill until you became this version of yourself that became a serial killer. It's awful and it's tragic, but I don't think there is a good reason for it. I think he just chose to be a violent, awful human being.
He was convicted and sentenced less than a decade ago, supposed to spend the rest of his life in prison, and additionally has that 69 years for robbery and disturbing bodies. So doubt he's ever going to get out of prison. At this point, we sit here, he's about 50 years old. So young to have done all this and to be in prison for the things that he has done at his age, I think. But I don't think he's ever going to get out. I think the police got this right. Paul, I think, is also going to get a life sentence, or also has a life sentence. He's also not going to see the light of day. I don't know his involvement in this, but I think there is some. So I sleep a little better knowing that people like this are both going to be in prison for the rest of their lives.
Me too. And just thankful that somebody came forward with some tips that caused police to search their property.
Yeah. Guys, we appreciate you hanging out with us through this one. This is, I don't know, you see characters like Hugo pop up every now and then, but to be involved in so many different types of crimes and to almost get away with it is always an interesting piece to look into. So like we said at the start, we've got some fun interviews coming up with former law enforcement officers, psychologists, authors, a lot of people lined up, in addition to our normal cases. When we do those are bonus episodes. We don't let those replace our cases. So we'll be back on Friday with a True Crime to Go and next Tuesday with a normal episode. And then we're going to sprinkle in those bonus episodes as we record them.
Don't forget, if you have caught up on everything that we have patreon.com. Search for True Crime Cast when you're there. And there's a bonus episode for every month since way back in 2017.
Yeah, there's over 60 extra episodes there if you're out. You can pay $3 for a month, binge them all, come back later.
And like we said, the entirety of Left on Dead Season 2 is there now or will be there very soon. But yeah.
A lot of good stuff over there, guys. We appreciate you very much, and we look forward to the next one.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.